Let's continue our story about Queen Esther by opening to the book that bears her name, chapter number 5, where we will pick up at verse number 9. This is all happening in 474 BC. Haman, the really bad guy in this story, the Hitler of this story, has taken it into his heart that he is going to annihilate all of the Jewish people within the Persian kingdom on a single day, the 13th day of the 12th month of this particular year. And he has conned King Xerxes into going along with this plot by giving him the impression that this is a group of people that don't fit in with the Persian Empire. They don't even bother to keep the laws of the king. And by getting rid of them, a whole bunch of money, millions and millions of dollars of our modern buying power can be brought into the emptied coffers of the treasury. Well, all of this became known to the Jewish people in the third month of the year. And everybody amongst the Jews began to grieve, Mordecai among them. And he grieves outside the gate of the palace. And Queen Esther sends him a change of clothing to try to get him to come in to tell her what's going on. And he doesn't. So she finally sends a messenger that she trusts out to talk to him and finds out about the plot. She finds out that there is an official decree recently released, like on that day, that in 9 months' time, every ethnic Israeli in the known world is going to be killed and their property absorbed into the coffers of the king's treasury. Mordecai has insisted she has to go to the king. She has to intercede. Now, she's afraid to do so. She's in her 20s. She's afraid to do so because the king hasn't invited her into the throne room for 30 days. And anyone that comes without an appointment can be executed on the spot unless the king reaches out with his golden scepter. But Mordecai tells her, look, you have perhaps been put in this place at this time to save the people. Get it done. And so she agrees. And at the end of 3 days of fasting, she goes to see the king, and the king holds out his golden scepter and brings her in and tells her that he would love to do anything for her, even give her half the kingdom. What is it she wants? And so she says, well, I want you and Haman to come and join me for a meal today, which they do. At the meal, the king asks again, what is it that you really want, Queen Esther? I'll do anything for you. I'll give you even half the kingdom if you'll just tell me. And she says, well, what I really want at this point is I want for you and Haman to come and join me for another meal tomorrow. And then I'll tell you what's really on my heart. Now, why is this getting drug out like this? Well, we don't know from anything specifically given us in the inspired text, but my suspicion is that God is causing her to draw this out so that Haman will do this last little bit of thing that he's going to do to show his hatred toward the Jewish people, and Mordecai in particular, so that when God drops the hammer, it will be a complete cleaning out of the anti-Semitism that seems to have taken root in the Persian Empire. And he will end up saving the Jews in such a spectacular way that they will be held in high esteem for a long time. And this will be beneficial to the Messiah program, the bringing of the Messiah at just the right time in history later to save as many people as possible. So that's my suspicion. Let's go ahead and see how it plays out. Now, we pick up with verse number 9 of chapter 5 by saying that Haman went out that day joyful and glad of heart. He was so pumped by the idea that not only was he a close companion of the king, but the queen, the chief queen, is also making him something special, inviting him to intimate private dinners on the spur of the moment and also planned dinners later. And this makes him exceptionally happy. He sees that his star is rising. But then his day gets ruined. It says, when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he neither rose nor trembled before him, he was filled with wrath against Mordecai. So as he's leaving the palace complex, he passes through the main gate, and there, in sackcloth, laying next to the gate, is Mordecai. And while lots of other people are bowing down in front of Haman, because that was what Xerxes had ordered, this guy doesn't get up in his presence to lay back down again in obeisance, because he's Jewish and he is not going to show that sort of deference, worship, if you will, toward the enemy of the Jewish people. And this makes Haman mad, that even though he was having such a great day, Mordecai is just a reminder that he doesn't have control of everything. He can't make this guy bow before him appropriately. Verse 10, nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and he went home, and he sent and he brought his friends and his wife Zeresh. So he goes home, probably had lunch with the king and queen. And so now he's going to go home and he invites his close friends to have dinner with himself and his wife. And Haman recounted to them the splendor of his riches, the fact that he's got so much, and the number of his sons, and all the promotions with which the king had honored him. Because remember, he is at the top of the military and advisors. And how he'd advanced him among the officials and the servants of the king. And then Haman said, even Queen Esther, let no one but me come with the king to the feast she prepared. So that's special. Tomorrow also I'm invited by her together with the king. So I've even got another dinner with her and the king tomorrow. And yet all this is worth nothing to me so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. So he says, even though I've got all this plus side of my accounting book, there's a great big negative on the other side. That Mordecai Jew is still alive. And so his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to her, to him, let a gallows, and I remind you again, don't think wooden scaffold with a noose. That's a Western concept, a much more modern Western concept. Think great big tall pole, wooden pole, perhaps sharpened at the top, on which a dead body is going to be either impaled or be affixed in some sort, maybe nailed to it. Because this is actually the Persian precursor to crucifixion that was then fine-tuned by the Greeks and the Romans. So let a great big prominent pole, 50 cubits high, be made. So 75 feet tall to hang the dead body of Mordecai on. And then in the morning, tell the king to have Mordecai hanged upon it. And then go joyfully with the king to the feast. And this idea pleased Haman. And so he had the gallows made. So he had this great big pole constructed. And that was how he was able to go to sleep and rest that night, because he figures tomorrow is going to be the best day of his life so far, because he will see Mordecai dead in the morning and have lunch, possibly dinner, with the king and queen later in the day. Chapter number 6. While we can assume that Haman is resting peacefully, the king is not. Because it says here that on that night, the king could not sleep. And so he gave orders to bring the book or the scroll of memorable deeds, the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. Now, there's a little bit of humor, I think, from our perspective on this, that we've all had those moments where we feel like we can't sleep. And so what do? We distract ourselves with things. We try to bore ourselves so that sleep will overtake us. What could be more boring than to have the official court record come, be brought and read to you? Just name after name after name, and date after date after date, and event after event after event, and so many of them being so mundane, just ordinary, that sooner or later, I think the goal was, his mind would just let go, and he would fall asleep out of absolute boredom of hearing the records read. And so verse 2, it was found written how Mordecai had told about Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs who guarded the threshold and who had sought to lay hands on Ahasuerus. Now, I told you at the time you needed to remember this. Mordecai got inside information about this assassination plot that probably was prompted by the horrible and failed invasion by Xerxes of the Greek homelands. Two of his closest bodyguards were plotting to kill him. And Mordecai found out about it, told Esther. Esther told the king, and the king had it investigated, found out it was true, and had them executed and their dead bodies put on poles as display of this is what happens to those that try to kill the king. Well, it was written into the record. Well, here it is. He's hearing it, and apparently what happens is the guy reading the record reads the event, and then he moves on to another event. And the king's like, whoa, 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 wait. Verse 3, the king said, what honor or distinction has been bestowed on Mordecai for this? So he hears about the plot, he hears about it being discovered by Mordecai and reported and how it was resolved and the execution, but he didn't hear anything about a reward because no reward had happened. Somehow that got dropped, it got skipped. And I think that God may have manipulated the situation that it got forgotten at that time so that it would be significant at this time. So, what honor or distinction has been bestowed on Mordecai for this? The king's young men who attended him said, nothing's been done for him. There's nothing here in the record. And the king then said, who's in the court? So, apparently, we're now close to the morning. We must be at the time when the official day is about to start. So, he anticipates that someone's going to be out in the antechamber. So Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to speak to the king about having Mordecai hanged on the gallows that he'd had prepared for him. So remember, he had his own little pole of impalement to be built during the late evening hours. And so now he's showing up here first thing in the morning to ask the king to give an execution order against a very specific person. And so that's why he's here. The king's young men told him, well, Haman is there. He's standing in the court. And the king said, let him come in. And so Haman came in, and the king said to him, what should be done to the man whom the king delights to honor? Now, we already know, because we heard the first part of this chapter, that the king has in mind Mordecai. But Haman doesn't know that. All he knows is that the king is very quick to welcome him into his presence and asking this question. Haman, what do you think should be done for the person that the king really wishes to honor? And so Haman, being the egoist he is, said to himself, whom would the king delight to honor more than me? I mean, I've been having great days. He must be thinking about me. So he decides, based on that assumption, to really pump this thing up. Verse number 7. Haman said to the king, for the man whom the king delights to honor, let royal robes be brought, which the king has worn, and the horse that the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal crown is set. And let the horse and the robes and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble officials, and let them dress the man whom the king delights to honor, and let him lead him on the horse through the square of the city, proclaiming before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Now, this is, I think, really ironic, because Haman is actually practicing here kind of the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And so he figures, what would I like to have done to honor me by the king? Wow, I think I'd like to wear some of the clothes, the royal robes that he's already worn. And you know what? I'd also like to ride on his royal horse that's all been decked out with the special ornaments that go with being a royal horse. And you know what else I'd like? I'd like for a really high official in the kingdom to lead that horse with me riding on it in the royal robes around the town, declaring that this is what gets to be done to the one that the king honors. That's what I'd really like to be done. So that's what I'll tell the king should be done for this person. And then it backfires on him. Because verse number 10 says, then the king said to Haman, hurry, you take the robes and the horse, as you've said, and you do so to Mordecai the Jew who sits at the king's gate. Leave out nothing that you've mentioned. Now, I really would have liked to have been a fly in the wall, because I'd like to see how well Haman was able to control his facial expression the moment that the king said these words. Haman, I want you to go and do everything that you've said, because you're one of my high officials. I want you to do everything that you just told me to Mordecai, because I need him to be honored. I want him to be honored in this special way. It had to have killed him on the inside to hear those words. But he doesn't have any choice in the matter. He has to do what the king commands. So Haman took the robes and the horse, and he dressed Mordecai. Now think about this. Mordecai has been in mourning for 4 days now. This is the fourth day. He may not smell the best because he hasn't been bathing as part of his mourning. And he's been wearing sackcloth, and he's been putting ashes on his head and on his skin. And so Haman actually has to get him cleaned up and physically dress him in these royal robes and put him up on the horse. And then he had to lead him through the square of the city, proclaiming before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Now, I'd like to have been a fly on that wall as well. to have seen how Mordecai reacted to this. To see one moment he is grieving over the idea that in 9 more months, all the Jews are supposed to be killed in one day because of Haman, the hater of the Jews, the enemy of the Jews, the Nazi of his day, the Hitler of his day. Suddenly seeing that guy having to come and pay him this special honor. I am convinced that he knew in his heart at this moment, this is God. This is God intervening, and it won't stop here. God's flipping the plot. He's turning the tables. He's starting with me, and he will certainly also do it for the Jewish people as a whole. So that is how Haman's day went so far. Not so well. Verse 12, then Mordecai returned to the king's gate. Now, I don't know if he was allowed to keep the royal robes or whether he had to put his own clothes back on, but I am sure that Mordecai was anticipating the rest of the story at this point. And so is Haman. So Haman hurried to his house, mourning with his head covered. He is ashamed of what just happened. The man that he was planning on executing has now become the special honored person of the day by the king. What else could go wrong? And probably also, he is expecting that there is something supernatural about this, that the gods are out to get him. The gods are against him. So Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had just happened to him. And then his wise men, that'd be his friends, and his wife Zeresh said to him, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of the Jewish people, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him. So they are convinced that the tables have been turned, that this is going to go badly for him. This is divine. And while they were yet talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried to bring Haman to the feast that Esther had prepared. Now, when I've told this story many times, particularly to young people, I kind of asked them, what would have been your first priority as Haman, the moment you saw things going against you? And almost everybody says, I would have begun getting out of town. I would have tried to escape before the king found out that Mordecai was Jewish and that the Jews were all scheduled to be killed because of my plotting. I would have tried to get out of the empire. And I think most people would have tried to do the same thing, but God did not give him the chance. The Secret Service escort shows up at that exact moment, and he has no choice but to go to the palace for the scheduled dinner, which he'd looked forward to, which now the only thing he can think about is, how can I get out of here? And so they hurried to bring Haman to the feast that Esther had prepared. Now, you would think that that's the worst that his day could get. Not even close. Chapter number 7. So the king and Haman went in to feast with Queen Esther. And I'm sure even as lovely and delicious looking as the food was, that Haman's not in the mood to eat. And it says, on the second day, as they were eating, drinking wine after the feast, that's the second day, as in this is the second feast that he's had with her, the king again said to Esther, what's your wish, Queen Esther? It will be granted you. What's your request? Even to half of my kingdom, it shall be fulfilled. So we're back to this again, is, Esther, I don't know what you want, but I'm ready to give it to you. Even half the kingdom is yours if you want it. And then Queen Esther dropped the bomb. I like to think about her as being God's hidden weapon. And so she goes off at this exact moment. Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be granted me for my wish and my people for my request. I want you, king, to save me and my ethnic group. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed and to be killed and to be annihilated." Now, I'm thinking that Haman was only halfway listening to the conversation up until this point, and then that sounds way too familiar to him. The wording is right out of his decree. And it may be at this point that it starts to click with him. No. There is no way that she's Jewish too. But it's too late. Now listen to the rest she says. "If we had been merely sold as slaves, men and women, I would have been silent, for our affliction is not to be compared with the loss to the king." So she says, if it had only been a matter of us being taken into slavery, I would have been okay with that. But the fact that we are all intended to be annihilated, I can't keep quiet about. And then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther, "Who is he? Where is he who has dared to do this? Who is the enemy of my queen and her people, her ethnic group that would try to annihilate them?" And Esther said, "A foe and enemy, this wicked Haman." And then Haman was terrified before the king and queen. He realizes beyond a shadow of a doubt, "I am toast. I am done because I have tried to kill off the great Queen Esther."